Okay, boys and girls, I am back, and that was Metal Nights with World of Forever, another one off the new CD, and I have to give a very warm Infernal Rock Radio and WFLM Radio welcome to the one and only, the man, the legend, Razor from Metal Nights.
How are you doing?
Now, how about that for an intro, Razor?
Oh my God, a legend? I don't know. Maybe in my own mind.
Well, hey, as long as you're a legend in one mind, it's better than being not being a legend in any minds.
Right.
Okay?
That's probably true.
Well, thank you so much for giving up your time today. Really, really appreciate it.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
And this is a patriotic day, obviously, so it was nice for me to have somebody over from across the pond on the show today, so thank you for that as well.
Absolutely.
So Metal Nights, tell me, 2007 did they start, is that correct?
Yeah, late 2006, the idea started to form, and first part of 2007, we started putting things together, and went through a couple changes in the beginning, and then kind of decided to take a break and kind of regroup with some more professional musicians, and did so, and the lineup has been great and solid, and very, very happy to be playing with the mates that I have in the band. They're great.
Who have we got in Metal Nights at the moment?
Pardon me?
Who are your band members in Metal Nights?
That would be Paul Calder and Billy King are on lead guitars. And then Danik Thomas is on bass. Dave Krause is on drums. And we had a person by the name of Adam Emmons who performed the keyboards on the album.
What made you have two lead guitarists?
Well, you know, we're very heavily influenced by bands like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, and we always loved the double lead attack of the dual lead guitars, and there was just something about it with the harmonizing that you can do, and you know, it opens a lot more doors, and then when you add it with something like keyboards, it just kind of sends it, I think, over the top, and that's kind of where we were headed. With our writing style, we wanted to, you know, we were very lucky to work with Craig Goldie of Dio as our producer.
Wow.
And you know, he brought some, you know, he was the one that said, you know, if we add keyboards, he goes, I think it's really going to make an impact. And I didn't fully agree at the beginning, but then as we started playing around and getting some ideas, I started to see the power of it, that it actually made in the songs. And it worked out for the best.
Excellent. Have you always done vocals?
Yes, I have always. I've always been a singer. I started singing at about the age of seven. Started doing some plays and theater out here in Los Angeles, and did that till I was about 14 years old, and then took a break when I was about, I think, 16, I heard my first Judas Priest album, which was Hellbent for Leather.
Oh, awesome.
Like that, I was just like, okay, this has got to be my life. So that totally was a very changing moment for me.
So what sort of things did you do when you were a young adult? Were you in bands? Have you always been in bands?
I've been in bands since, you know, after I got out of the theater and doing plays and stuff like that, I started to do, they were all musical, and I sang in every one of them, but when I got out of that, started playing in high school bands, and then when I got out of high school, formed a band that played in L.A. on the Strip, alongside bands like Motley Crue and Rat and everybody else at that time. And I just don't think the timing was right for that band at that time. We had a lot of problems. I mean, it was very cutthroat on the Sunset Strip in Los Angeles in the early 80s.
Yeah.
It was like a war zone. Bands were just, you know, fighting to get signed right and left, and who could out-top each other, you know, and things like that. Where now it's a much more, I think, respectful atmosphere. And I think just the timing wasn't right back then. I think it is now. And, you know, like I said, having the guys in the band that we have now and having Craig Goldie as our producer and, you know, having him do some co-writing with myself, it's just been, you know, it's really taken things to another level for us. And we're very pleased and very proud that we got to work with Craig.
Excellent. Did I read correctly that Metal Knights started off as a tribute band?
Well, yeah, we kind of just started out doing a tribute show and kind of got tagged as that. We were starting to work on some original stuff when a good friend of mine who was one of the legendary metal DJs out here in Los Angeles, Ton Mastery, became very ill and needed a liver transplant. And she didn't have any insurance, even though she was very, very famous. She didn't have insurance. And I had gone through having to have a transplant several years earlier. So since I had worked with Ton in radio back in the early 90s, I had always known that she was out there, hadn't talked to her in so long. And then all of a sudden, my good friend Rudy Sarzo called me one day and said, do you remember Ton? And he told me her situation. I talked to her sister, and we decided to gather some of the best tribute bands in L.A. and put together a show. It was called The Tribute for Ton, and we played all the kind of favorite songs that Ton really loved, and from the bands that she really put on the map through her radio career.
Right.
And so that's kind of how it all started, and that's when, you know, we invited Craig Goldie and Simon Wright from Dio. They showed up along with Terry Ilias from XYZ and Tony Montana from Great White. We all had this great jam at the end of the night. We raised a lot of money for Ton, and it was then when Craig came to me and said, you know, I think you have what it takes. How would you like to take it to the next level? And
Excellent. So
we started working together.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So you've had a lot of experience before you've come into Metal Knights and founded Metal Knights.
Yeah, well, I've been a creative person my whole life. If it's not performing and singing and recording, I've had my hand in radio where I was at least playing music that I loved. Editing and directing music videos, working in television and movies, doing visual effects, things like that. I'm very, you know, got a creative brain.
So you've gone across the whole entertainment industry then.
I can. And I've always paid attention. I tried to keep my mouth shut and learn and then take it all in and then try to put the things I've learned over the years into Metal Knights, and it seems to be paying off. You know, we're signed now with Rat Pack Records.
Yay!
Our new CD, World of Forever, just went on pre-sale yesterday, and will be released around September 29th, and we're very excited. You know, the things are starting to happen, and they've happened quite fast, you know, when you think about the music industry.
Well, yeah, it is a difficult industry to be in, especially at the moment. So good luck with that. I do wish you all the luck in the world.
Well, thank you.
Tour-wise, what sort of things have you done with Metal Knights?
I'm sorry, on what?
On tours, gigging.
Oh, well, we've played shows out here. We're in talks right now with our friends Benedictum. And we're trying to get something of a tour with them here in the States. We'd love to be able by next summer to try to get over to Europe. We know there's been a lot of we get a lot of either through website or MySpace a lot of requests for us to come to places like the UK, Portugal, Spain, Germany, Italy, and so you know those are places that we would love to be able to come over and play.
Get your name downs for the festivals over here. That's my advice.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what we'd love to do. So, hopefully, you know, with the way things are going, if we can keep the momentum rolling, things go good, the album sales go good, you know, we'll hopefully be over there.
Yay, cool. You mentioned before, did you, that Metal Knights had had a couple of lineup changes early on?
Right. It was the original lineup. I think when they realized it was getting more serious and we were going to turn to writing all originals and things like that, when Craig became involved, I think some of the players got, you know, didn't really want to commit to having to, you know, because it's a very, it's not easy, you know. You got to live this 24/7 if you want to really do it and make something of it. And some of them, I don't think, were really into that. They were more into, you know, playing tribute music and stuff, which is great. But when I realized that, a friend of mine, our drummer, Dave Krause, I was introduced to through our mutual friend, Rudy Sarzo, and we kind of hooked up and decided to reform the band, and we did, and now we have the lineup we have. It's been solid since for the last 2 years, and we're very happy with it.
You mentioned your album coming out, World of Forever.
Yes.
Have you had any others prior to this one?
Yes, we had an EP called The Crossing, and we also did a cover of Don't Fear the Reaper for a movie soundtrack called Cross. And it was kind of a horror movie. And they needed somebody to do a cover of Don't Fear the Reaper, so they asked us to do it. We did it.
Excellent.
And it actually turned out, you know, where people went kind of nuts over it, and we kind of became known for that. It's like, well, you know, that's great, but you know, we love Blue Oyster Cult and all, and I actually know the guys in the band, but I was like, you know, come on, I'd rather be known for our own stuff. But it was very, you know, it was cool to do that song and to have such feedback like we got from around the world on it. And you know, the stuff on the new album is just. We spent a whole year working on this, and from the time we started, well, actually more than that, a year and a half from the time we started writing until now with the release of putting this whole thing together.
Have you done most of the writing for this album, or has it been a group effort?
It's been a group effort. Craig and I have written several songs together, and I write mostly all the lyrics. Paul Calder, one of our lead guitarists, wrote a great song called Last Goodbyes, and it was just when he brought it in, it was just like, yes, this is exactly what we need, and it didn't really need much massaging to it. It was there. We kind of beefed it up a little bit, brought it up to date, gave it a little bit more heavier sound, and it turned out it's one of my favorite songs off the album.
I've got that to play later on in the show as well, so I look forward to
everybody. Everybody contributes. It's not something that, you know, it's like only me and somebody else is going to write. We don't have that kind of attitude. It's like anybody who has an idea in the band can bring it forward, and we'll work with it and implement it if everybody agrees. So.
Well, that's good.
Very cool vibe in the band. It's one of the only bands I've been in my entire life where there's no drama. And it's so refreshing. I mean, the biggest battle we ever have is like we had last night. Who's going to buy the beer, and what kind of beer is it going to be? That's about it.
Do you think your age and experience has helped in that calming effect on the band?
Yeah, I would say so, because back when, you know, in the 80s, I was, you know, in my early 20s, and I was just wound up and full of piss and vinegar and ready to go out and conquer the world, you know, and thought I knew everything. And like I said, I just don't think the timing was right at that point. But now, I think, you know, age has mellowed me a little bit. I'm in my mid-40s, and I... But we had the help of Craig and his program Destiny Bridge, and we just kind of followed what he said to do, and we worked his program, and the next thing you knew, we started working with him, and I was writing with him, and, you know, the songs started getting better and better and better, and then we asked him to produce it, and he was all for it because he was fully behind the band and the music.
Excellent. So that really worked for you, the listening part.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Would you say that's the best piece of advice you could give to young bands now? Listen.
Yeah, I would say in really anything you're out there doing is to, you know, I've always had this approach where if I walk into a new environment, I sit back, keep my mouth shut, listen, take it all in, take some notes, and then really start to throw myself to the lions and learn what I have to do. And I really think, you know, I took in a lot from the time I met Rudy Sarzo, you know, who's been in so many just monumental bands. And I listened to him and the stories he would tell me and the things that, you know, how his mind works in this business. Then listened to Craig Goldie and Simon Wright and a lot of other people to what they have to say about the music business and, you know, the changes and where it's going and how they see it now. And, you know, all these things I really took in, and I tried to implement them with the guys in the band, and we all kind of share the same outlook on how the music industry is right now, and attacked it at that level, and things seem to be working out for us, so it's kind of a blessing.
Excellent. Which would you say is your favorite song to sing?
Well, you know, I would say I love Last Goodbyes, because that's kind of what we opened the show with, but and it gets the crowd going. But I would say the most heartfelt song that I sing, and that's easiest for me, and that I truly can put myself in the mind space, would be Miracle in Disguise. It's the story of what I went through, almost dying and having to have a life-saving liver transplant almost 5 years ago. And that song, every time I sing it, you know, it's a very personal song, and it means a lot. So, you know, I have fun singing them all, but I would have to say Last Goodbyes, I'd like to say The Enforcer, too, and Miracle in Disguise are probably the three that stand out as you know, ones that emotionally get me involved when I'm singing them live.
Okay, you just heard me clicking there. I've just changed the song so we can hear Last Goodbyes after we finish the interview, rather than wait, because we've talked about it quite a bit. So, what would you say has been the hardest lesson you've had to learn in your career?
Patience. Definitely patience. When we, you know, when I hit the studio and get in there, I want to work and get it done. And that is when I first started getting back into the studio with Craig, that's kind of how I was. And I was impatient, and, you know, it takes a long time to craft something and do it right. And, you know, I remember wanting to have it done now. Let's get this done now. And, you know, like I said, it was over a year-long project of doing it every day, sometimes 6 days, 7 days a week, sometimes 15 hours a day in the studio. And, you know, from recording and mixing and coming up with other ideas. So it was a very long process, and it really made me and forced me to learn to be patient about the whole process.
Well, they do say patience is a virtue, so...
Yeah, that's true, and it has made its way over into my regular life, which is great. I love it.
Excellent. You mentioned you were very poorly and, you know, had a sort of life-changing near-death experience. Do you think it changed the way you looked at the industry?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you can't go through something like I went through without really coming out of it and looking at life in a completely different way. And it kind of spilled over to when I found out, I never thought, after, you know, I had a transplant, they dissect you to put the, you know, a new organ in you.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought, after they cut my diaphragm, that I'd ever be able to sing again. And it turned out I was able to sing stronger and more powerful. And when I found that out, I was like, well, you know what? Let's give it one more shot. And once I started talking to Craig about what I wanted to write about in the beginning, was I wanted to tell this story of what I'd been through. And so we wrote three songs together. And, you know, when I started to see how easy the lyrics really started to come for me and things like that, and the melodies and the music, it was just, you know, I was like, yeah, I can definitely do this. And it made me, and then I had to realize, you know, it's not still the 80s, you know. It's not throw $1 million at you and say, okay, you know, you got a record deal. We're going to go shoot a, you know, $500,000 video. It that doesn't exist anymore, really.
No.
A lot of bands. But there still are, and I think there still is a need for record labels. And we were very impressed with Rat Pack because they're a label that is on the rise. And they seem to be taking it, they're growing, but yet they're not growing so fast that they're going to cut their nose off to spite their face. You know. And that was what impressed us. And we had a lot of discussions with labels, our management did, from all over the world. But when it finally came down to it, we were impressed with Rat Pack, and we had really hoped that we would end up with them, and in the end we did.
Excellent. Well, I'm quite a believer in karma and fate, and you know, your voice coming back stronger and more positive is total fate as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think so too, because when I came out of the transplant and having been sick for, you know, so many years and literally dying twice on the table and being resuscitated before I had the transplant, I, you know, when I came out of it, it was a long, brutal rehab of close to 9 months, learning how to walk again, to eat again, to, you know, shave again. I mean, just to do everything. And but I took it a day at a time. I never gave up. And something was different inside me. That's all I can say. And I ended up having this drive. And, you know, I decided that if I was going to do this, I was going to do it right. And I was going to follow what I'd learned throughout life and implement it and just go for it and try to do it the best I could and live it. And luckily, I'm with a great band with band members who believe in the same work ethic. And, you know, I think it's starting to pay off.
I mean, I had an experience, but when, you know, the way I looked at it afterwards was, do you know what? We only get one chance at this.
Right.
Let's do it properly and the way we want to do it, and let's cut all the bullshit and the drama, because there's so much of that, and it's more so in the music industry.
Absolutely, and I'm very lucky that, you know, I've gotten this great second chance at life.
Mm.
And to be able to get the gift of life from an organ donor and, you know, to make something now of my life and doing and living my dream. And these are things that, you know, I came close to dying, as close as you want to come.
Yeah.
And it just made the biggest difference in my life when I came out of it. You know, I was much more focused. I looked at life a lot differently.
Mm.
You can go through something like that and not feel this awesome responsibility to the one who died and was so gracious to give the gift of life to somebody. and to also, you know, do the best with what you've got and to make something of your life. And so, like I said, I just honed in and became super focused and super driven, and just haven't stopped since I started.
Well, it's working for you anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I never expected to be where we're at right now this soon. I really didn't think it would happen. But then again, you know, I put my mind to the grindstone, and I'm sure the guys in the band would tell you that sometimes, you know, I've heard things like, you know, you are the most freaking driven guy I have ever seen. I go, well, you try dying and see what happens.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. What about your family? What do they think about you sort of going hell for leather at this again now?
Well, it kind of really freaked my wife out. I met my wife in 1995, and I had just been diagnosed with the liver problem, and I told her, I said, you know, I just found out I have this problem, I don't know what's going to happen. And she said, you know, whatever it takes, we'll go through it together. And she meant it. And she stood by me. She took care of me. She nursed me. And, you know, I was this guy that was working in movies and television, doing visual effects with short hair and glasses when she met me. And then all of a sudden I was resurrected after the transplant as a metalhead. And she was like, what happened? You know, so she was a bit taken back, but then again, she had always said to me that she had hoped to marry somebody that had the talent to be able to sing. And so she got on board. My daughter's on board. My daughter, in fact, makes a little appearance on the new album.
I was looking at your photographs in MySpace, and there's a few photos of daughter watching daddy at work, and she's just adorable.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm of Scottish heritage. My mother was a McGee, and so we, you know, she's got the full-on red hair and pale skin Scottish look, and she's got the temper to go with it.
Oh dear.
Yeah, and but she's a really good kid, and she's an actress, and she's performing now too and singing. And she's actually got an agent already. It's amazing. So she's doing quite well for being 10 years old.
And I bet you're such an overprotective father, having been in the business.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's great to see her with being signed with a very top agency that handles, you know, all the Disney Channel kids and Nickelodeon and all those shows. And it's just a great feeling to see her getting into being able to sing and to perform and do acting and everything else that she's into doing. And you know, when the opportunity came up for us to utilize her on the album as an intro piece into Miracle in Disguise, it's actually the words that she said to me as they were wheeling me in for the transplant. She knelt down to my ear and you know, said, Daddy, you know, hold on. I know you can make it. But if God wants to take you, I know you're going to be with the angels.
Oh, gosh.
So we had her recreate that.
Oh.
And she did an awesome job. She tackled it like a pro. And it just turned out so cool and so great. It gave everybody chills when they heard it.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. So,
how emotional.
Yeah, it's very emotional. And you know, I've actually watched people listen to the song with that intro and break down and cry.
I wholeheartedly can imagine that. That is the kind of thing that I would do, because it's just so real.
Yeah, I did an interview I think it was in Canada several months ago. And by the end of the interview, after the DJ, which she was a female too, and she played it, she was bawling on air. And I was like, you know, I had to calm her down, you know. But it has that effect. And I know, you know, it was tough for me. The first time we ever performed it live out here at the Universal in L.A., in Hollywood, I was, the very first time, I didn't even know if I was going to be able to make it through the song.
Oh.
I had my good friend Pamela Moore there from Queensryche fame, and I got to sing a song with her, too. But when it came time to do Miracle in Disguise, I was, you know, it was tough, and I was choking back the tears, you know, it was really tough. And you look in the audience, and there was a huge crowd there, and to see people with tears flowing, it, you know, and then try to keep it all together on stage, it was quite tough the first time.
Gosh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Because I suppose for you, it's just like reliving it all the time.
Well, you know, it has gotten a little bit easier, but when I do sing the song now and we perform it live, you know, it's a special moment. It's one of those moments in the set where we go from just, you know, hard rock driving heavy metal to where we take a little breather and kind of have a pattern interrupt and do this real melodic, mellow, heartfelt song. And it adds a little, you know, diversity to the performance, and it has a really special, like I said, personal message. And another reason that I wrote it is I wanted the lyrics to inspire people to become organ donors, because this is something that is very important to me, because without it, I wouldn't be here. And also to help stomp out the hepatitis C epidemic that's running wild. People can get hep C several ways. I got mine through blood transfusion.
Right, that's quite a common one, isn't it, believe it or not?
Yeah, from back in the 80s and didn't even know it till 95.
Yeah.
By then it was too late, and I had to wait another 10 years before I got a transplant. So, you know, I'm working now with the Tawn Mastery Foundation. And Tawn passed away. She didn't get her transplant.
Wow.
The passing away. I lost a very good, dear friend that day, and have been working with her sister, Kara, since then to help spread the word through the Tawn Mastery Foundation about slaying this dreaded dragon that's out there right now. And so many people have it, they don't realize it. You know, so we're trying to get people to get out there, get tested. They now have self-testing kits that you can get. You can swab your mouth and bang, you can get the results and you can go seek help. I mean, they do have treatments for it now.
Oh, so
we're trying to spread the word that way too, you know, and that's another personal mission of mine.
Excellent. Going back to Metal Nights then, what is the future? What is the next 12 months got in store for you and the guys?
Well, just I think a lot of playing out live and taking the new album out on the road, and hopefully hooking up with some major promoters and booking people over in Europe and trying to get over there for next summer.
Well, wonderful.
Yeah.
What is MySpace pages for you?
I'm sorry, what?
What are the MySpace pages so people can go and add you? I did mention it before, but I'd like you to bring it up again.
Yeah, it's myspace.com/Metal Nights, KNIGHTS, music, and they can go there and check out all the latest information. Then we have the website, which is in the process of being updated, and it's www.TheMetalKnights.com.
TheMetalKnights.com.
Right.
Excellent. Well, I wish you all the health in the world, and I wish you all the luck in the world with your career.
Well, thank you so much.
And thank you very much for your time, and do come back. The release date again for World of Forever is the 29th of September.
Yes, and the pre-sale orders are on right now. And if people go to the Rat Pack America.com site, they can go ahead and check out their, it's in, under the header Rock on the Rise. Just click on Metal Nights. You can order the new CD, and you'll get a special limited edition autographed poster with your pre-order. from now until the release date. So if you, you know, go there and check it out, order it, and I, you know, you, I don't think you'll be disappointed. It's a very classic heavy metal that we are very inspired by the music of the bands that really started the new wave of British heavy metal in the late 70s and early 80s.
Yay! So, yeah. Yay for British music and inspiration, I say.
Absolutely.
Well, Razor, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I'm going to play Last Goodbyes after this interview, if that's all right.
That'll be fine. And thank you so much for the interview. It's been a definite pleasure talking to you. And I'd like to say hey to all the fans in the UK and everybody listening who's streaming around the world. And, you know, check out the new CD. Go ahead and get it. And hopefully we'll see and meet you on the road.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Razor, and this is Metal Nights.